John, how's it going?
Hey, John.
There's a lot of people in here.
John, you want
First, I want to thank Cindy for inviting me here.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you, Brendan, for letting me into your house. 20 years ago, you wouldn't have let me in. Thanks to my friends for showing up to be my support. I have friends today, and some of these friends I drank with for many, many years, and now we're all doing this together. And today, I was trying to get a hold of, connect with my brother so I could bring him here to listen to me. And the deal about that is, for many, many, many years, we did not have anything to do with each other. And I've been doing this for a while, and he's been in the program for about a year now. And when we were out there drinking and partying, we had different types of lifestyles. And we did not have anything to do with each other now. And now I see him every week at least. And that's a whole different way of living for me and for him. When I was growing up, my dad was an alcoholic. And the reason I can say that is because later on, he did go to Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober. But I did not like living in the house with that. And there would be nights that the arguments between him and my mom would just go on and on and on all night long. Just screaming and yelling all night. And it would be about him drinking. My mom didn't want him to drink, and he wanted to drink. And so growing up, the way my brothers handled it was they tried to get him to pay attention to it. Get my dad to pay attention to them, and I withdrew. I sat in the back. I made sure nobody noticed me. That's how I grew up, not wanting to be noticed. And one of the things that I learned from all that is I did not want to be like my dad, so I was never going to drink, ever. And I did really good for 22 years. A week after my 22nd birthday was a friend of mine's 21st birthday. We went out, and I was with this woman, and she was older than I was. She was a divorcee, a hippie, and they had kids. And I was at 22 years old, I was very, pretty young and naive. And so we sat there, and I started drinking. Singapore Slings, I remember. My first drink, Singapore Slings. I had like three or four. I go, what was the big deal? Why was I thinking this was a bad thing? And later that night, she took me home to her house, and she did me. And I was just going, oh my God, this is great. Why did I fight this so long? So, it was less than 6 months, I was already blacking out. I was definitely an alcoholic from the moment I was born. I know that today. So within 6 months, I was blacking out. Doing blackout drink. Well, 6 months after I started drinking, my brother that was the next oldest to me, I'm the oldest in the family, shot himself and killed himself. He was 20 years old. And he'd been drinking and using, back in those days it was red. They called him red. And lots of alcohol. And he got so messed up that he killed himself. 20 years old. That didn't stop me. That wasn't, oh no, that's not going to happen to me. Blackout drinking, one of the times I remember was I woke up from a blackout, and first things I could see was my hands on the steering wheel. Oh, this is nice. What's going on? And it starts slowly coming around, and I'm coming up the freeway out of El Cajon. That was the best curves that come out of El Cajon. Slowly I had to figure all that out, where I was, what I was doing. Okay, speed up, stay in the lines. Slowly start expanding. As my vision started expanding, my mind started to expand. And I'm, so where am I going? Oh, I'm going home. Oh, that's a good thing. I'm going home. Yeah. So where was I? Oh, yeah. And on the seat next to me was a paper bag filled with 9 kilos of pot. And I'm driving down the freeway blacked out. Okay, good. That wasn't enough. That was still pretty early on. That was still back in the mid-70s. And a few years after that, in 1979, that was 4 years after I started drinking, or 5 years after I started drinking, my youngest brother, who was 20, he was 20, and he just had a baby, he just had a son, his son was 2 months old, and he crashed his car and died, 20 years old. And he was in a drunken stupor, had no recollection of anything up to the second he was dying. My mom ended up adopting the baby, and so he became my brother, nephew. So, and a lot of times too, when I was drinking, the drinking was so important to me that sometimes I would have, I lost my negativity real fast. And I would have a date, I'd be on a date with a woman, and we'd start talking and just having fun, and I'd start drinking. Pretty soon, it was the drinking that was important to me. And I didn't care. Didn't care who I was with, what I was doing. And, I'd end up alone a lot because the drinking was important. And it's because the reason I drank was because I was alcoholic. Once I started to drink, I couldn't stop, ever. So in about 1980 or 81, I met this other woman, and she introduced me to methamphetamines. Oh, yeah. and that was a 10-year run with methamphetamines and alcohol. It was just a lot of fun times. I actually had a lot of fun times too. Thinking, Sundays, and when we were all drinking together, we'd go to El Torito and have brunch. And they'd shoot the corks across, all the way across as far across Baltimore Avenue as they could with the champagne bottles. And we'd all go our separate ways, and then by 6 o'clock, we were all back at El Torito's, and we'd drink until, and it was every Sunday, just Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. So, I was just thinking about that today, since this is Sunday, and I'm coming to the speaker meeting to speak. So the last few years I had of drinking were the way in the book, chapter 3, they talk about more about alcoholism, and it's the great obsession of every alcoholic is to control their drinking. It's to control and enjoy their drinking. Well, that was my great experiment for about the last 4 years I drank. And I would do good for a while. For 2 weeks I'd have one or two or three drinks a night. I'm going, yeah, this is great. But every time I would invariably end up really drunk, blacked out, hungover, sick. And I did that for quite a while. And one of the things that happened, I got an inner ear malfunction. It's something, and it causes a lot of vertigo. And I used to go to a Meniere's support group, and tell them I was grateful that I got Meniere's, because that's the final straw that brought me to my knees with the alcohol and the drugs. I was doing one of those two-week runs where I was just having two or three drinks a day, drinking lots of Kahlua. I thought, that's the other thing that chapter 3 tells about switching from this to this. So I drank a lot of Kahlua. Figure, how can you get real drunk on Kahlua? Well, if you drink 2 liters in 6 hours, you're going to get pretty drunk. So I started doing, I did that run of a 2 or 3 week run where I was doing really well, making it to work every day, get up in the morning. But then I woke up Saturday morning, I just go, well, I'm going to start drinking. I started drinking, and I woke up Tuesday morning, really, really sick. And sick, not only physically sick, but sick just spiritually, everything, just the sick that I don't ever want to feel that day again. That's one of the reasons I'm still here. But I woke up that morning, and she's sick, throwing up in the bathroom, hanging over the toilet. We all know. I'm sure we all know that one. And I just knew that day I cannot have the first drink. I don't know how. Well, I knew because my dad was in AA. My his mom was in AA, and my dad's dad died of something. You know, it's just all this stuff. So I knew some stuff, but I didn't know enough. And so I stopped drinking. Quit drinking for a while. So my sobriety date, that was like in May. That was my last drink. My last drink was actually on New Year's Eve of 90. So my sobriety date is 1/1/91, just to get that in there. And I could tell, I could spend this whole half hour, or however long it's supposed to be, just talking about my New Year's Eve. I had a lot of good ones. And I remember most of them. But that last one was just, I had a small glass of champagne. And when I, it was really interesting when I took, and I'd been like 7 months without a drink. And the drugs had stopped like 7 months earlier. And when I took that drink, all this rage and anger and just came over me. And I couldn't explain it at that time. Today I know it was self-pity. It had to do with self-pity. All my friends are still drinking. You know, I'm sitting with them, they're drinking, and I'm sucking on an ounce of champagne, getting pissed. Well, so I went another 11 months before a friend of mine called me up one day, and he goes, "Hey, I went to an AA meeting last night." I go, "Hey, what a concept. Next time you go, call me on the way." He goes, "I'm on my way to what now?" Oh. All right. So, and when I first started going to AA meetings, it wasn't for me, I wasn't home. It wasn't an instant hit. So I fought it for quite a while, actually. And the interesting part about all that was when I first, that one Tuesday morning when I woke up, I thought all I had to do was quit drinking and my life would be great. I'd be done. I'm over. Got it. Well, my life just kept going down and down and down. The anger, the rage, the self-pity, the why me, just went crazy. And the thing about alcoholics, there's basically three things that alcoholics can do. They can drink, treat their alcoholism. They can white knuckle it, which is what I was doing for however long that was, 11 months, 18 months. Or we can come into AA and get recovery. And I sat in the back of that room, of every room I went into. I had a big coat. My hair was really long. It's so curly. I never took care of it, so it's just a mess and a big old, big mustache and all that. And I was hiding behind it, and my hands were in my pocket. I'm just sitting there like, just glaring, daring anybody to come up to me and say, "You don't belong here." Nobody did. Nobody wants to get out. And finally one night, I was so broken, they asked me to share, and I went up to the front and I said, "I hear you guys sharing about how happy you are and all just all this stuff. How do you do that?" I never heard. And as it turns out, I told her AA meetings all the time now, and I hear all the time what they do to get out of themselves, to get recovery. But I asked, "I never heard." And the guy says, next guy up says, "Go to steps 30, work the steps." "How dare you tell me?" So I had to fight it for like 3 more months. But what did happen is I finally just hit bottom so hard on that one, on my life becoming, you know, that first step is powerless over alcohol, and my life had become manageable. For me, I had to hit 2 bottoms, 2 separate ones, in order to finally get it. And so I finally went to a step study, got a sponsor, started working the steps, and somewhere within those first 3 months, all of a sudden one time I noticed, I go, "Hey, I just went 2 days without thinking about a drink, without being angry, without any rage." I go, maybe this will work. And I kept looking at those steps and going, how can that make me feel better? You know, reading those, well, I have to learn. I have to learn how that makes me feel better. By having a man walk me through, learn what he learned, and to work the steps, you know, admit to myself and to others all the stuff I did to people. And that was learning too. I had a lot. I had a huge list of stuff that when I went to bed, I could not go to sleep for hours because I had this whole thing of all these things that I'd done to people that I was ashamed of, that I was afraid of. And it took me hours, literally hours, every night to go through that whole thing and my stomach churning. And that's one of the other things that happened is the alcohol was no longer to cover that up. It just got to be so big. It was so heavy. And so one of the things that happens is my mom and I talked today. I didn't like the way she treated us. She was very, very anal. You want to call it anal? And today I love my mom. Doesn't matter. And she's still, she hasn't changed. I was just telling these guys out there that when she does, you know, my brother, even though he's trying to get straightened, he was on Section 8, that's the one where you get the rent assistance, and they have zero tolerance, and he got arrested for possession, small amount. They took him right off. It's immediate. Oh, we're pulling you out. My mom, bless her heart, says to me, you know, we've talked so much that she's learned the language. She goes, I'm going to move in with Danny. That's my brother. And the reason is so that I can sleep at night. I can't sleep knowing that he's out on the street. Well, she won't tell me that I need that. What she's really trying to do is she thinks she's going to help. And I learned in AA and through life now that I can't help you until you come to me and ask for help. You know, and he's not ready. But he took it. You know, he took the help anyway. That's what we do. That's what we do with our talks. We'll take advantage of anything we can. One of the other things that happened with my nephew, he, at about, I'm not even sure when he started, but he started using and drinking. And when he was 24, he died. So one of the things that I've learned about alcoholism and drug addiction is it's deadly. You know, I go to a lot of meetings and we never talk about that part of it. But one of the places that you end up, if you keep going, is dead. And these were young. You know, I believe that the alcoholism killed my father, even though, because his body was so ravaged, he was like a two quarts of vodka a day and a case of beer kind of guy at the end. But alcohol kills. You know, and I've heard this a lot, that alcoholism and drug addiction, it's, to me, they're one and the same. You either end up in prison, you end up in insane asylums, or you end up dead. And there's a lot of people, I mean, everybody in this room, I feel, is lucky. There's just not very many, of all the people that drink and drink to excess of alcoholism type, never, ever get out of it. Never even try. And the people in this room, I feel, are lucky. You know, I feel lucky. I feel blessed. How did I find it? How did my brothers not? How did my brothers die and I didn't? I don't know. God had something planned. I don't know what it is. That's the thing. One of the things that I used to always fight was that, you know, when I'm looking at the steps, it talks about God a lot, higher power. I just, stop. One of the things that happened, that somehow, I don't even know how it happened, probably God did it, was I came up with the mantra for me is, I'm not in control, I don't know who is, and I don't care. In other words, I don't care who is in control. And that just made it so much easier all of a sudden to become the higher power. That my spirituality has changed. Spirituality to me means that I'm not in control. I'm not the one doing it. And I don't know who it is. This isn't going so well. Okay. Thank you. So for me, It's when I and when you come into this room, I feel as though all the time I'm choosing life. And I've seen a lot of death around alcohol. And I'm sure a lot of you have. And the death is not just only physical death, but it's a spiritual death. It's a death of loneliness. It's a death of just hate and anger for me. It's hate and anger and rage. And I hated everybody. I would see people laughing and I'd wonder, what's up with that? Stop. I'm not happy, so like, how can you be happy? And that's, you know, one of the things that when I came into this room, these rooms, is a lot of people laughing, and I was very resentful for a long time. And for me, it took, I keep pointing to the wall because I always see them on the wall, but I don't see them here, but it took those 12 steps. I was amazed. I'm absolutely amazed how that worked. How just doing those 12 steps, working them the way that my sponsor told me to work them, has relieved the obsession to drink, which on my own never went away, even though I don't know how it happened. I don't know how I stayed sober for 18 months or 2 years without doing any of that stuff. Stubbornness. You know, one of my character defects is stubbornness, and I never actually lost my job. First of all, the job is family-owned, family-run job, so they all, it was kind of like my family. Well, he's drinking now, so let's just pat him on the back. He'll be okay. But I never wanted anybody to take care of me. And I call that character defect because it can block the helping hand. It can block that helping hand that I need. And so I never lost my job, and it was because of that. Just that, I'll be damned if I don't let you in. You're not going to be in, and if you're going to take care of me, I'm going to have to let you in. So today, I have a lot of friends that I'm very close to, and some people that I just meet, I just met Carrie, and I feel very close to Carrie. You know, just been going to one meeting a week with her, and it's just amazing. And watching the growth in some people, that's the other thing I like about AA, is when I come to meetings that have a lot of newcomers, I love watching the growth. I love when I see the lights come on, you know, when those eyes shine, they come in broken and bloody and beat. And their eyes are dull. There's just something about it. And when those lights come on, I really like that a lot. Like this morning, I spent the morning with my sponsor. We went hiking up the hills, and we just talked the whole time. And it was like 2.5 hours, and just like that. Before I know it, I'm 3 miles in. I'm going, holy cow, how did you get this far? Well, we were talking in close connection stuff, which I crave. I've always craved, but I didn't know that. The thing that AA has, I've heard this, man among man, worker among worker, my stepdaughter, you know, a father to my stepdaughter, who's getting married in less than 2 weeks now, which is, you know, when I first met her, she was 14. That was painful. And actually, my wife and I were actually going through therapy then, which was pretty good. But now she's getting married and she wants me to, I'm going to be taking, I forgot how she put it, but when we go to the wedding, we're going to set the whole place up. I'm the game boss, I guess you call it. She's going to turn it over to me and say, you take care of this. And that's really, that's special. So overall, to me, drinking relieved what I needed relieved before I knew how to do it without it. It made, you know, one thing I am grateful about is that I'm grateful that I did drink, because today I'm the man that I have always wanted to be. And it took that drinking. Part of it was to be able to communicate and be with other people When I was, before I drank, I was scared of everything. Start drinking, no fear. Go do really bad, stupid things. But I learned. I learned how to talk to people. I learned how to talk to women. And that's the other thing, is when I first got to AA, I got my sobriety from women. Because I was definitely afraid of men. And they loved me until I could love myself. And then when I got into recovery, today I do my recovery I get from men. And that's a huge change for me. I mean, I trust and love men today. And that came from... Yeah, there you go. Both steps. And I don't know how, I mean, I'm forever grateful that these guys, these men and these women did all this before us. I'm forever grateful that there's enough people that when they first come in, stay. They stay long enough to help the next person come out. You know, I mean, I saw some tokens being taken today by a couple of women who were grateful for the person who gave them that token because they were here before them. And that's what we do. I can't do this alone. We do it. This is a we program. It takes all of us to get you, to get me sober. And so my message about AA is it's about life. It's about coming alive. And it's about staying alive. It's about helping others. When I help others, I remember when I come to meetings where there are a lot of newcomers and they share, I remember that last day that I woke up. Because I never want to go back to that day ever again. I never want that. So, thank you for having me.